If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over three whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
Welcome to the first episode of the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Special. I am your host, Thor Nystrom. For 30 minutes each week through the NFL Draft, I will be joined by special guests from around the NFL Draft world to break down a position group. For our first episode today, there was only one option to be that guest. I've spent the past month talking about quarterbacks with this guy off air, so with the combine fresh in our rearview mirror, I wanted to bring on Fantasy Pros' own Derek Brown to help me tackle this fascinating position group. D-Bro, are you ready to get into it?
Thor, come on, man. Episode one, baby, let's kick it off. I'm so ready for this, man. You know, we've been talking about this through text, through phone calls, through lots of chats. Sometimes I'm in the shower when we talk prospects. Just happens. But I'm ready to get into it, dude. Let's break it down.
Let's do it. Let's jump right into our top five. We don't have any time to waste. So, D-Bro, why don't you kick us off with your QB5 in this class?
So Thor, I know we're going to differ here a little bit, man, but my number five quarterback is Hendon Hooker right now. And I know it's different from yours, foreshadowing, but my QB5 and the reason I go with Hooker is because I think that he has the NFL arm strength to make all the throws. That's not going to surprise anybody. But what I see difference and what pushes him into my top five is the rushing ability. And whether you're looking at this from an NFL perspective or a fantasy perspective, that rushing ability is really all the rage in the NFL, both from an RPO offensive scheme standpoint and just creating another equation for opposing NFL defenses to solve. And so I like Hooker a good bit. I'm kind of curious where his draft capital kind of lies in the NFL draft. But as far as like a prospect himself, the rushing is there. I don't think he's going to be a massively dynamic rusher in the NFL, but can he give you 300-400 yards rushing on the ground yearly? Sure. He has the arm strength to make all the throws and the accuracy that we're kind of looking for. But, I mean, you tell me, what did you see out of his game?
So I have Hendon Hooker as QB6. I think you and I just have my guy, Tanner McKee. I have him fifth. I think you and I have those two guys swapped. It's funny with this quarterback class, even coming out of the combine, how you have them in sort of buckets that, or at least that's where I got them. I have the top two guys in sort of a bucket and then the next two guys in a bucket and then these two guys in a bucket and sort of like tiers and a little bit of drop off in between. I think there's a little bit less risk with Tanner McKee than there is Hendon Hooker. And the reason why for me is Hooker's coming off that ACL injury in November. So you're going to have to be okay with the medicals and the projected timeline for when he comes back. He's one of the oldest quarterbacks in this class. We make fun of Stetson Bennett for that, but Hendon Hooker is not much younger than Stetson Bennett. And he comes out of that super gimmicky Josh Heupel offense. Josh Heupel has made a lot of undeserving quarterbacks a lot of money over the last, 7-8 years between being an offensive coordinator and then as a head coach. The play caller, he cleaves the field in half for his quarterbacks where the reads they have to make, it's before the snap, not after the snap. What I like about Hendon Hooker, you mentioned it, it's the mobility. I also like the arm. right? And so when he got that read, when his first read was open, when it was an advantageous look, typically he looked awesome. It's when the stuff doesn't go right, which you don't see a ton in a Josh Heupel offense, particularly the first couple months of last year, you know, prior to Hooker getting injured, because they had a lot of talent around him. Those are my questions about him. You know, as far as Tanner McKee, sort of the opposite in terms of his collegiate career was played out in a very poor situation, a poor offensive system, poor talent around him and everything like that. But enormous pocket passer. He measures into the combine 6'6", 231. He actually tested way better than I thought he would. 8.69 RAS. You don't see as much of that mobility on film. So it's not like I'm going to go out and, you know, give him an enormous amount of credit for it, but you have to maybe uptick the mobility just a bit in your mind. But again, big pocket passer, accurate to all three sectors is Tanner McKee. And he knows what he's doing in the pocket. Some of these kids, their mechanics are all over the place. They don't mind their lower half. They don't marry it to the upper half. Will Levis, we'll talk about him in a little bit. But he was talking about this at his podium session about how in college his arm was so talented. Sometimes when he'd see the guy open, he'd just flick his wrist as opposed to, you know, setting his feet, getting the shoulder squared, everything like that. That's how you start to see these accuracy issues cropping up. Tanner McKee, you see him minding that stuff a lot more. So I just think that there's, you know, probably a higher floor with McKee, and I can project him a little bit easier because it's not the gimmicky thing he's coming out of. You almost have to give him some credit when you start baking the context into his situation. You know, he's your QB6, Tanner McKee. Do you have any thoughts about McKee?
Yeah, and I like the fact that we're right basically in the kind of same ballpark. Like, Tanner McKee is my QB6, Hooker is my QB5, and I like McKee a whole lot. Where I look at McKee's game, like, my comp for him is Matt Schaub. I really liked his arm talent. Do I think that he has a cannon? No. Do I think that he can make all the NFL throws? Absolutely. Is he a better thrower of the football than Hendon Hooker? Absolutely. Like, you look at Tanner McKee from the pocket. He has immensely better ball placement and accuracy, both through the short and intermediate. You could see those things in the footwork kind of, and I think it's kind of where it falls off for Hendon Hooker sometimes, is the short intermediate accuracy for Hendon Hooker can kind of wax and wane. You don't see that out of Tanner McKee. And I love that you brought up the testing for Tanner McKee, because this is a guy going all the way back to high school who had good short area agility marks. And you see that in his escapability and his pocket presence. Like, is he going to be a rushing guy at the next level? Hell no. Is he a guy that consider him bide time and has quiet feet in the pocket? Absolutely. So while I have Tanner McKee as my QB6, I look at him and Hooker in the same tier, as opposed to possibly, I think Hooker's floor, I agree with you, is a little bit lower. I think that with the rushing equity, it gives his ceiling a little bit of a boost. But I like Tanner McKee's game a whole lot. Like, could a team take him in the middle rounds, like, say, sometime in early day three, and look at him as, okay, if we got pressed and this guy had to make some starts in a simpler offense, could he keep us afloat in the, like, for a few games? Absolutely. I just look at how the way that the NFL is trending, both from a skill set standpoint and offensive designs and things of that nature. That's why I have Hooker above McKee. But I like both of them, to be honest, man.
So, and I agree. Those guys are in the same bucket. I think you and I, like, overall, we're pretty close on them. You could flop them either way. And I think we both agreed. Both those guys are probably going day two. I don't think there's another quarterback in this class that's going to go day two. You have a bigger drop off after those two guys end up going. Let's go to QB4. This is the spoiler alert. This is the only guy in our top six where we have them listed the exact same spot. So why don't you kick us off? Who's your QB4?
The roller coaster, the carnival ride himself, Will Levis, man. It's all there for Will Levis. It's just it's a question, and it's a big, big question, Thor, on if he can put all of these things together. And I think, I mean, legit, like, if you're talking about NFL draft prospects that are simply just trait-based selections, trait-based prospects, if you look this up in the dictionary, Will Levis's face and a can of mayo is going to be right there as far as the picture. I mean, it is what it is, man. Like, Levis, if you look at all of his accuracy marks, like, even if you go back to 2021, the season that everybody props up and it's like, okay, the Will Levis, the good Will Levis is in that year. Okay, well, his PFF passing grade only jumped up to 24th. His adjusted completion rate is only ranked 37th. And his big time throw rate is 96th. Like, these are not fantastic marks for a guy where we're talking about, or at least in NFL discussions, has been talked about, like, his ceiling is just through the freaking roof. Well, I agree that the raw traits are there. I have a lot more concern than maybe some talent evaluators in the NFL about, can he get there? Because you look at, you were talking about the system that Hendon Hooker came from. And yes, I agree with that system. Like, they used stacked formations for Hendon Hooker and allowed his like 1-2 progression to be extremely easy. Will Levis basically asking him to even do half field reads is a projection, Thor. It's an absolute projection right now, because Will Levis, and you talked about this with Hooker, he looked great in college whenever it was like, okay, predetermined first read, drop back. I have a clean pocket. I'm able to set my feet and poof, I throw a laser to the guy wide open. Where everything comes unraveled for Will Levis is, oh dear Lord, I have to move around. Okay, my footwork and marrying that with my arm is not good. Like, basically, that's why his accuracy goes really, really good to, oh my Lord, was that's not even an NFL caliber throw. What is that? So he's going to have to increase and raise the floor from his play-to-play consistency. Honestly, for him to be an average NFL starter, Thor, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but that entire, those valleys have to be raised higher for him to even meet NFL starter type of play for me. Well, it's not that I hate Will Levis, but his footwork and marrying that with his upper body is a mess. He's a one-read pony as far as the NFL goes. So asking him to do half-field reads, much less full-field reads, is a total freaking projection, man. So, like, the talent is there, but can he get there? That's a bigger question that I'm having problems answering than maybe the NFL talent evaluators are.
1,000%. Yeah, I think you set that up well. I'm just going to read from my notes of when I was rewatching Levis. You know, obviously I covered these guys during their career live. Levis, I think you called it a roller coaster. It was sort of a roller coaster over the last couple of years. Less of the peaks and valleys in 2021 when he had the awesome supporting cast around him. One of the nation's best offensive lines that year, lost a lot of those guys to the NFL, of course, going into 2022, also had the services of Mr. Wandale Robinson. And then this past year, you know, he loses those guys. And then Chris Rodriguez was suspended for the first month of the season. So the context around him, the situation wasn't quite as good. And you saw way more of the vacillation. But watching the tape, it was the same sort of experience, but just like, you know, more precipitous, because, you know, you see the plays one after the other. Levis, he's a live wire player. Mean that in every sense. Doesn't sense pressure whatsoever. Saw him get crash test dummied numerous times. Zero discipline with mechanics. Absolutely has the arm for window throws. NFL interest attributable for this reason. Arm has flashes of crazy talent. He'll drive a beautiful ball between two defensive backs, drop one in. But he also has maddening bouts of inaccuracy on account of the mechanical haphazardness. Airmail specialist, sail to a sideline near you. Then I made a note in here about he's definitely an athletic kid, but it's north-south athleticism. He lacks wiggle. Like when he's, you know, people, you know, they'll comp him to some of the, you know, like Josh Allen or like some of these guys that have come out that have given you this great rushing utility in the NFL. I don't think we're going to get that from Will Levis, because he's a north-south sort of train when he's running downfield or whatever. And it sets up these high-speed collisions when the safeties are bearing down on him and stuff like that. And in conjunction with how many times he got clocked from the blind side and in the pocket, different stuff like that, you start to wonder about the durability long-term. Obviously, last season, he was nicked up the entire time. And yeah, you give him credit for being tough, but that's also something you're going to want to monitor because of the amount of shots he takes. It's part and parcel of his game. It just is. And then I said, throws too many hospital balls, leading receivers into defensive backs. I saw that over and over and over again. Like, you know, a guy like CJ Stroud or a guy like Bryce Young, we're going to talk about these guys in a second. They're guys that see it before it's there. They throw their receivers open. Will Levis is a guy that was consistently putting, like, leading his receivers into the defensive backs, was something that I was seeing. Like, there was, once, twice, three times per game where you're cringing like, oh boy, you know, and then the receiver just gets blasted. And then the last note I had, not a nuanced thrower, the hammer that sees only nails. A lot, it's just fastball, fastball, fastball. Improving the mechanics, you know, and getting more consistent with that, even paying his mind to it. Because he had talked at the combine at his podium session about how his arm was so talented in college that he just didn't pay attention to it a lot of times. Like, you know, when the receiver would come open, he'd just fling the ball without setting his feet, without getting his shoulders squared, stuff like that. That would lead to a lot of, you know, some of these inaccuracy issues, whatever. You pay more mind to it. You do more work on that. Hopefully that's going to lead to some of the accuracy getting a little bit better. How are you going to improve under pressure, though, is one of the things that I'm wondering. He just doesn't sense it. He just doesn't, you know, like, you know, I made the note in my notes, but he, you know, here's empirical proof of that. In terms of this class, he is right near the top in terms of pressures that can get converted into sacks. Levis's percentage of that, 26.8 pressures that were converted into sacks. Anthony Richardson, on the other hand, you know, we're going to talk about him in a second. He was only 9.2%. So just on the other, completely other side of it, Will Levis, his number, it's up with guys like Tanner McKee, you know, for instance, you know, Tommy DeVito is another one that's in that phylum. You know, it's not the best when you're thinking about this guy as an athletic guy. There's a lot of questions there with Levis. There's things that need to be worked on, and he does not have the ceiling of Anthony Richardson. So that's why I end up ranking him four, but it's sort of four with the bullet there. I mean, there's a lot of ground between him and the QB five. D-Bro, now that was a similarity of ours with the QB four. Now we got some differences in our top three. Why don't you kick us off with your QB three?
Before I get to the QB three, dude, I want to sit here and put this out there for the people at home. And we're not reading, we have not compared notes. We have not talked about it. Thor's quarterback article is not live yet, but I'm going to sit here and read off the page for what I have for my QB primer that's live on fantasypros.com right now. Will Levis is late to feel pressure in many instances. He will also flee clean pockets. His ball placement can be scattershot with him sailing passes, underthrowing receivers, and putting balls behind wide receivers. I'm also curious of how much rushing utility transfers to the NFL. Straight line runner with little wiggle to his game. And he's mostly the charge ahead style rusher that lowers his shoulder. His invitation for contact with defenders can be problematic for long-term health, despite his sturdy 6'3" frame. You love to see it, Thor.
Love to see it. All right. Who we got for QB three, D-Bro?
All right, man, my QB three, and I know this is where we're going to go off the rails and we're going to differ a little bit. My QB three is Bryce Young, and this where starts another tier. So Will Levis is in his own tier. Hendon Hooker and Tanner McKee are in their own tier. Bryce Young and Anthony Richardson are also in their own tier for me. And so Bryce Young is my number three ranked quarterback. And this comes down to, you're talking about ceiling and floor combinations. And while I think the floor for Bryce Young is a lot higher than Anthony Richardson, I think Anthony Richardson can access a ceiling that Bryce Young cannot. Now, does this mean that I hate Bryce Young as a prospect? No. But where I think that some of the physical attributes kind of come into play as far as ranking these guys, both for fantasy and the NFL, like, Bryce Young has the arm strength to make all the NFL throws, but he's never going to be confused with a guy that has a rifle for an arm. And where you see kind of those arm strength limitations kind of crop up is when he fails to set his feet in the pocket. Now, when he's on the move, he fails to set his feet and he's trying to put zip on the ball, he can kind of get erratic, man. Like, his throws can kind of sail on him or go low. You see this constantly throughout his film. Now, does that mean his accuracy is not good when he's on the move? No. It's really when he is in the pocket, he drifts back, doesn't set his feet, and he's asked to sit here and put some more mustard on the ball, and you see the ball go, pew! And that's really where the problem is with Bryce Young's game. Now, again, he has good pocket presence, and I honestly think if you're looking at the guys that where the rushing equity translates possibly the NFL, I think Bryce Young is probably the second best rusher as far as any of these quarterback prospects. And people could see, oh, well, Will Levis is in here. well, you're going to talk about CJ Stroud being an underrated rusher. Well, yeah, those things are true, but Bryce Young is a good rusher of the football. He's mobile. You see the escapability in the pocket whenever he's trying to buy time, as well as outside of it, Thor. And the thing about it is you don't see it on the stat sheet. Does that mean that he can't be a good rusher in the NFL? No. People are going to say, okay, what about the size? I don't care about the size for Bryce Young as far as his rushing goes. He is mobile. He has good lateral agility. He follows his blocks, and he is elusive in the open field. You don't see Bryce Young take big hits as far as like when he takes off. You see him either dive or he goes out of bounds. I like Bryce Young, but that's really what something that I want to highlight in his game that I think the rushing equity translates. And I know one other point. I think that we're going to differ on this, but I think Bryce Young is okay getting through progressions, but I think his trigger is slower than you do. I see him hang on his first read a little bit too long. I see him forced tight window throws into coverage at times, and that's where I think my evaluation for Bryce Young is a little bit different than yours. But since I've decided to poo-poo Bryce Young a little bit, go ahead and tell me why you love him.
Yeah, how dare you? I had to bite my tongue from jumping in there at the end. Bryce Young is my QB1. I will say that the ground between him and Stroud for me got narrower after the combine. Bryce Young, you know, of course, all he did was measure in, and then he was wearing his stilettos to the podium session, which I found humorous. But, you know, we didn't get to see him do the rest of the stuff. We'll get to see that at the pro day. But he's still my quarterback one. A couple notes from you know, my film session, whatever. I think he's a prodigy in the pocket. He, you know, like, you know, at work, there's a couple of fans of the movie Top Gun. And in the most recent one, they do the flight simulator. And I won't give away any.
Don't spoil this. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I won't give away any spoiler alert for people out there. But they're going on this hard mission and they have to get in the flight simulator or whatever. And people keep, you know, crashing in the flight simulator. Bryce Young is the guy who would go in one time, he'd crash and then never again. It's like he only needs to see it one time. And then it's like click, 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 click. Best quarterback in this class under pressure. And in terms of the extending, something that I'm super duper impressed with of his game. A note that I had here, Young. So this is from my scouting notes. Young extends commercial length plays into episode length high wire acts. It's sort of similar to the Kyler Murray thing where he can weave through traffic back there. And then the second someone just flashes a little bit open, he can throw the ball from multiple different arm angles and put it on the money on that guy. You're right. He doesn't have the howitzer of Richardson or Levis, but the decisions are always correct, invariably. You're going to have to make some alterations for him in the same way that the Cardinals had to make alterations for Kyler Murray. They have similar peccadillos. You were bringing one of them up. Bryce Young likes to set up deep in the pocket, just like Kyler did. It's the same sort of thing that both of them want the vantage point, I think, you know, for being 5'10 and a half, whatever. And then the other thing is it gives them more sort of ground to run around, you know, in terms of extending the play. But I like both of that stuff. Bryce Young, again, similar to Kyler Murray, they're twitchy. Both, you know, we usually think about that in terms of the lower half, but it's also the upper half, like just made of rubber bands. Mm-hmm. You know, again, not the biggest howitzer in this class, but he generates more velocity and gets the ball further downfield than you would think for a player of his size. And it's because of that elasticity of his upper body. It's like there's baseball pitchers that are 5'10 that can get it up near 100 because their shoulders, it's like they're made of rubber bands. And that's sort of like how I think of Bryce Young a little bit. You do have the questions with the size, et cetera. But one thing that mitigates the durability concerns for the next level a bit for me, we saw Bryce Young starting in the SEC, the highest level of college football for 2 years. He played more games than other folks because, you know, the year before last, Alabama was in the playoff. This past year, they weren't, but they still played 13 games, whatever. Bryce Young only misses one game. That was for a sprained AC joint of his throwing shoulder. That's an injury that costs other quarterbacks 2-3 games. Bryce Young missed one. He sort of heals like a Wolverine, at least if you're using that as the example. There was the one injury that we saw him have in college. So for that reason, right now, he remains my quarterback one. But like I said, we're getting a little bit narrower on that. Let's move to quarterback two, D-Bro. Who do you got on your list?
I mean, it's got to be Anthony Richardson, man. The guy who tested like a Greek god at the combine. And my comp for him coming out is Colin Kaepernick. And I look at a lot of similarities. And I know everybody's hyping Anthony Richardson's game. I really like Anthony Richardson. And chasing the ceiling, for me, if you were going to take a ceiling shot in this draft class, it is not Will Levis. It's Anthony Richardson, and yep, by a mile, baby. Yep. Like, I really love his game. But the fact of the matter is Anthony Richardson looks like a guy who has only really started one season in college. You look at how they built the offense around him, a ton of bootlegs out to the right, which really it not only cuts the field that he's going to have to read in half, makes the read simpler, but if the first or second read is not there, then you lean on the athleticism. He's not going to be able to do that in the sense of he needs to progress to full field reads. Can this help him as far as all of these athletic traits transition inside of an offense that's not going to ask him to do a ton or carry the offense at first? So really how we saw Jalen Hurts operate early on, how we've seen Colin Kaepernick operate in that, it is the offense that they're probably going to build around Anthony Richardson, whether this is year one, year two, whenever he hits the NFL field, they're going to run the ball a ton and protect him and ask him to only do a certain amount of things. Does that mean that he can't get to where he's a full field read guy? No, you see in times of his film where he does that, but you also see that he is still a guy that looks like a guy that has not started a ton of games. And the reason that I comped into Colin Kaepernick, not only does the athletic measurables and the mobility and things like that line up, the thing about Anthony Richardson's game, and I think that his biggest growth point when you get past progressions and all this kind of stuff, Thor, is that every freaking ball does not have to be a full bore fastball with him. And that's the problem with him as a passer. We need to see better ball placement. We need to see better touch, both to the short and intermediate areas of the field, because the touch is there on the deep ball, man. You see him lace freaking lasers on the deep ball. I'm not worried about that. It's the finer points of playing quarterback that are going to come from not only NFL coaching, but more starts under center. So Anthony Richardson is my QB2 because I'm willing to sit here and say, you know what? Screw it. Let's go for the ceiling. If I'm going to chase ceiling and we're going to sit here and swing like Mighty Casey at bat for the home run, let's freaking go, man. Let's go with Anthony Richardson on that.
Yeah, Anthony Richardson, all-time swing for the fence pick. You know, obviously goes out and tests. And by the way, good for him for doing the full gamut of tests. We've seen some of these athletic quarterbacks coming out in recent years that for whatever reason didn't do the tests, the athletic testing at the combine, and I think it was a mistake. Malik Willis.
Yes, let's not bury the lead. Willis should have fired his freaking agent for not allowing him to test.
Agreed. I had a phone conversation with someone a couple of days ago coming back from Indy where we talked about this. I said, can you imagine, you know, because this was like right after the buzz with Richardson, you know, that I think it was a day or two after he had tested. And I said, can you imagine if Malik Willis had tested last process, where he would have gone instead of where he ended up going? And the guy just laughed and he said, Malik Willis got bad advice. And he sure did. Yep. But good for Richardson for showing up, going through the test, and then proving to be the most athletic, size-adjusted quarterback to ever enter the NFL. He has the perfect 10 score on the RAS system. 40 and a half vertical, the broad jump that almost got to 11 feet, both those are the best that we've seen. And then the 40-yard dash, 4.43 at 244 pounds and over 6'4". The physical package is absolutely ridiculous. Obviously, you're going to have to improve the mechanics in order to improve the accuracy. One of the things that I am sort of behooved by with Anthony Richardson in comparison to Will Levis, I sort of brought it up before. Will Levis badly struggles under pressure. He badly struggles sensing it. He also struggles making the decision once he realizes it's on the doorstep too late, right? He'll just make panic decisions, whatever. Either gets clocked or also put the ball up for grabs and do weird stuff like that. Anthony Richardson, he makes really good decisions under pressure. He senses it. And he, it's also the thing where the rusher can have a free shot being teed off on him, be three steps away from him. And Anthony Richardson, he's not panicking at all. And the reason why is he knows he has the athleticism to you know, sort of like Superman going into the phone booth, putting on the cape. I will get out of any bad situation. My athleticism will get me out of it. You saw it at the end of the Utah game, where a game that Anthony Richardson essentially won single-handedly for Florida. A couple of the plays he made there at the end of that game were like, oh my gosh, this is stupid. There aren't NFL quarterbacks that could make these plays. But then, you know, on the other hand, you see some of these other games. He plays South Florida a couple weeks later. He was terrible. And South Florida had one of the worst defenses in the FBS. And so you saw these wild vacillations with Richardson's game. You have to give him the caveat that he's not very experienced. You know, in terms of overall starts, it's sort of analogous to Trey Lance. This is Anthony Richardson's first full year starting. The year before, for whatever reason, Dan Mullen decided to start Emory Jones over him at the same time when Dan Mullen was only given 100 touches to Dameon Pierce. And then, like you mentioned, then Richardson goes into Billy Napier's system. The years before that, Billy Napier at ULL, it's all that rollout stuff. Before, it was to the left with Levi Lewis. You know, he was like a little pint-sized scrambler guy. And then now he had this enormous ball of clay, whatever. But it brings up complications when you're trying to project him into a pro-style system, like you said. The important thing, though, for this is the team drafting him, you need to build that entire offensive philosophy around Anthony Richardson. And then you go forward with that. And then you see, you have to maximize his ability of hitting. And then, you know, you're going to have to improve the mechanics. And then hopefully you can improve the accuracy enough. He does not need to be pinpoint like Drew Brees or anything close to that. It just needs to be good enough so everything else can play up. He's going to get a lot more spacing just because of his athleticism. He mentioned at his podium session, every time I'm surveying the field and every receiver is covered, that means I'm not. Right. And that's the way that it is. The game is slow for him in his mind. He's a really smart kid. That stuff is all there. I like that stuff more than I like with Will Levis, for instance. And then the athleticism as well, et cetera. It's just you're going to have to improve that accuracy. Debro, moving to our last one, your QB1. Tell it to the people. Who's your top quarterback in this class?
CJ Stroud. And he is my QB1 by a mile, baby. I love CJ Stroud so freaking much. He's one of the, honestly, I just love him as a quarterback prospect, dude. He checks so many boxes. Like last year, he's top 10 in PFF passing grade, yards per attempt, big time throw rate, deep passing adjusted completion rate. It's all there, dude. He's an underrated rusher. I think that, and this really kind of ties into my comp for him. I comped into Justin Herbert. You know, we talked about this a few weeks ago. People hate that comp, but tell me how many narratives that CJ Stroud fits that the same thing with Justin Herbert did when he came out. Quiet leader. Okay, maybe he's a little bit too quiet. Oh, sounds like Justin Herbert was not a rushing quarterback in college. We see him rush more in the NFL. Justin Herbert. Special arm talent. And yes, CJ Stroud is a special arm talent. Does he have a cannon like basically Josh Allen? Hell no. I'm not telling you that he does. Is he above average? Oh, you better believe he is. And really where it comes in, Thor, is that CJ Stroud has the ability to throw that no other quarterback in this class has in terms of ball placement and accuracy. The second level throws that he litters his film with as far as the ball placement and accuracy, hitting guys in stride, it's honestly game film porn, Thor. It's absolutely just sex through and through and through, and you love to see it. Just put it on repeat and just have yourself a day, baby.
Yeah, CJ Stroud, he's the sniper. That's how I think of him. You know, and you mentioned the athleticism thing, and that's a quote unquote question of his evaluation. I think that thing, he's gonna shoot that thing down at his pro day. He decided not to test at the combine. I think he badly wanted to. You could hear that in his voice at his podium session. We talked about how Malik Willis got bad advice. I think CJ Stroud got really good advice. I think CJ Stroud's agent said, listen, CJ, I know how bad you want to prove to people that you're athletic. You cannot test on the same day as Anthony Richardson. This guy's the Loch Ness monster. You cannot, we can't have people comparing, you know, that. Like you're going to go out today. You're going to win with your arm. You're going to dominate that throwing session. Then we're going to defer the athletic stuff to your pro day when you will be a winner again. because people don't think you're as athletic as you actually are. Good. Let's take the W on that day. I thought that was really, really smart. And then, like I said, from the pocket, the sniper thing, he mentioned it. CJ Stroud mentioned it at his podium session. They asked him, like, why didn't you take off more before the Georgia game? His last game of Stroud's career, that was the first time we got to see him running around more, making decisions on the move, throwing on the run, throwing accurately on the run, different stuff like that. He was fabulous in that game. But he mentioned when you spend 8, 9, 10 hours working on one play, you don't want to give up on it at the first sign of pressure or the first sign of your first reads gone. This is a guy who he made himself into a pocket passer. When he was a kid, he didn't have access to quarterback gurus, stuff like that. He taught himself this with YouTube tutorials, right? He wants to be the pocket passer. He wants to be great at that. Now, in the NFL, they're going to teach you more like CJ. There are times when your receivers are taken away where you can take off. And I think, like, he is going to be perfectly amenable to that. And we're going to see, you know, again, the athletic profile that will justify that. You brought up the Justin Herbert comp. As you know, D-Bro, when you called me with that at first, I was like, man, that might be, you know, might be going a bit above, you know, like, you know, just in terms
you
of everything.
You thought that sauce was a little spicy. Let's just throw it out there.
I thought it was a little bit spicy, but, obviously I watched all Stroud's games live over the years. But, like, mm-hmm. I went back and watched his film. I started to see it more and more. More and more and more and more. There was a couple of things that I had missed live about Stroud's game that the nuance of it starts to jump out more when you're watching on film. I'll give you one example. One of the all 22s that I was able to watch, I think it was the 2021 game against Purdue. Now, Purdue that year, mm-hmm. they had Carl Loftus. They had a couple other dudes that are in this class. They were a top 25 SP plus defense, so it wasn't a super duper crappy one. But at the beginning of that game, I actually had to rewind it to the start. Like after I had gotten like a minute in, which is like, numerous plays, as you know, it's like chop, 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 you know, play, 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 play. Because every single throw was at the line of scrimmage or in front of it or just slightly, you know, like basically every throw to that point was 5 yards within the line of scrimmage and before. And so I thought like the thing was glitching. It was showing me a similar type play, but every single time. But that wasn't actually the case. What had happened was Purdue started out the game dropping everybody back because, you know, Ohio State that year, obviously they had Olave, they had Garrett Wilson, they had Jackson Smith and Jigba, and Purdue's like, yeah, we're not going to let you torch us over the top, which smart strategy, right? No, CJ Stroud was just hitting these guys really quick because Purdue's playing so far off him and letting those studs just get the yak stuff. Well, then Purdue at a certain point was like, oh my God, we're just, you know, bleeding yards here. So they had to move everyone up. What do you think happened next? The very next throw, the first time CJ Stroud in that game throws downfield, it's a wide open touchdown, literally wide open. The next one, when he threw it downfield, it would have been a wide open touchdown. It clangs off the guy's hands in the end zone, was right on the money. So I, you know, all that different stuff, taking what the defense gives you. And it's not the most sexy thing, right? But think to the Super Bowl with Pat Mahomes, right? Pat Mahomes, who has a howitzer of an arm, unlike we ever seen before. Was he throwing downfield against the Eagles? No, because of the Eagles' defensive strategy. Pat Mahomes, he had to play things a little bit more conservatively and nick them. And he did. And they won that game. That's an aspect of CJ Stroud's game I don't think that gets discussed enough, but that I appreciated it more and more as I was watching it. CJ Stroud is my quarterback too. But like I said, you know, with some of this stuff, and then when he goes and he tests, and I think he's going to test pretty well athletically, he, for me, is closing that gap with Bryce Young, but I still have him at QB2. D-Bro, before we move on to the rest of our QB discussion, we're going to get a little bit deeper here in a second. I have to mention Fantasy Pros' 2023 NFL Draft Guide. We are very proud of this bad boy, and you can find it at fantasypros.com/draft guide. It includes hundreds of scouting reports, mock drafts, big boards, our Senior Bowl and NFL Combine coverage, and all kinds of goodies, and it is free. Premium subscribers also get access to our NFL Draft position rankings. Consider going premium today and get your 2023 NFL Draft Guide now at fantasypros.com/draft guide. D-Bro, we wanted to dive in a little bit deeper into this class. We just talked about the top six guys. Just briefly go a little bit deeper. Toss out a couple guys for the folks out there, sleepers, stuff like that, maybe to keep an eye on. First question I have for you, D-Bro, you know, outside of the top six guys that we had just discussed, is there any quarterback for you who's getting more hype than you think his game deserves? And sort of think about this guy. Is there a fool's gold sleeper in this class that jumps out to you?
Oh my gosh, man. Like, people are going to see how fast Max Duggan ran and be like, oh, Maybe he's a mobile quarterback. Oh, maybe he should go higher than he should. No, he shouldn't. I'm sorry. You cannot tempt me with any kind of Max Duggan false hype. I'm not here for it. I'm not going to bite. I'm not there. I'm not drinking that Kool-Aid, baby. Not for a quarterback that last year was outside the top 40 in PFF passing grade, adjusted completion rate, and big-time throw rate. Okay, that's great. That's grand that he could run. If you put Max Duggan under center for any NFL games, dude, he's going to need the running ability, because if his first read is not there, he's going to sit here and take off. The processing is not there. His arm is not fantastic. And you talk about an adventure versus the pass rush. That's yeah. Max Duggan, baby. So no, fool's gold. Count me out on Max Duggan.
You and I are on the same page about Max Duggan. He left a lot of yards on the field with open receivers. You know, we saw that watching Quentin Johnson's film, but also some of the speedsters, you know, people will get to later on as they go through, you know, Darius Davis, a guy that we saw blazing in the combine, stuff like that, because they would cut the field in half for Duggan. And like you said, even then it was like click, 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 click. And Max needed to see that guy open before he pulled the trigger. I like a lot of things about Max, but the slow processor is an issue. For me, my fool's gold sleeper, it's Jaren Hall, a guy that we had higher hopes for at the Senior Bowl. And it's just not coalescing for the guy. There's these disparate traits that you like, right? Like he's athletic. The arm strength seems to be solid. At least it does on film. Different stuff like that. But again, it's just not coalescing. The accuracy comes and it goes. And it seemed like when he had the better supporting cast around him in college, that's when he would get pulled up. But like when he had, you know, for instance, this past fall, when our boy Puka Nacua, when he gets hurt, all of a sudden, Jaren Hall, not nearly as effective in the pocket. So it's like when the circumstances around him would go down, he would too. At the Senior Bowl, he had all kinds of issues with decision-making, with accuracy, certainly with his mechanics. Like a couple times in the stands in Mobile, we were like, it was, you know, I talk about cringe. Like there was a couple cringe reps that he had. He was getting picked off clean. He was getting balls tipped at the line. He was missing short. He was missing long, different stuff like that. And then he goes to the combine and he measures in an inch and a half taller than Bryce Young, but the exact same weight for a guy. Like, you know, he was a Jaren Hall. He comes from this family of athletes, former baseball player, and he throws from all these different arm angles. And when you're thinking about all this different stuff together, you're like, oh, you know, this guy could be intriguing. But again, it's just he has never put it together where it's become like this mechanically consistent thing where you can trust the play to play to play. You know what you're going to get. So I'm tossing Jaren Hall out. He's going to be ranked way lower for me. D-Bro, okay, so I want you to play GM here, okay? And I'm going to play owner. So our organization needs a developmental quarterback, but we're capped out. We're low on picks here. We only have a round 5 pick that we can spend on this thing. We're on the clock now, and I'm looking at you to make the call. Who are you picking here? A quarterback outside the top, you know, 6 or so that we had talked before? Because, you know, like we mentioned before, those guys, we're pretty confident those guys are going to go they'll all be gone heading into day 3. But outside of that group, who's the other guy that you would hang your hat on for your career of like 2-3 years down the road that you're most confident could be starting games in the NFL?
So, well, basically, you're asking me to wrap a bow on this, Thor, and who is the Brock Purdy of this class?
Yeah, that's right.
And if that's going to be the case, I'm going to go with Jake Haener. That's the easy name for this one. And really, this comes down to Haener, quick, easy, clean mechanics. And he also shows some escapability in the pocket and really good short and intermediate accuracy. Can he be a guy that could play point guard in an offense and as a good processor and the ability to sit here and make some plays outside of structure? Absolutely. So like, I like Haener. Is he a guy that's going to jump off the stat sheet for you? As far as like box score scouting or just the athletic physical traits? No. But if you look at his stuff from last year, Thor, like at Fresno State, he was 15th in PFF passing grade. He was 7th in adjusted completion rate, 26th in deep ball completion rate, and he was top 35 under pressure. So if I'm tossing a dart late as a guy who could be this year's Brock Purdy, that's Jake Haener for me.
I like that. Yeah. And the guy I'm going to toss in, you know, I talked about the buckets, you know, the top couple and then the next couple and then the next couple. For me, the next two, actually, I would put in the same bucket. You know, other people certainly different. But for me, the 7 and 8 guys are in a bucket. You mentioned Haener. He'd be one of those guys. And then the other one for me, it's Aiden O'Connell, who came from Purdue. He came into the process a little under the radar because he'd done really good prior to 2022. His game regressed a bit in 2022. Another guy where the circumstances went against him a bit, both in terms of the personnel around him and then new personnel. The one good receiver he had just come in from Iowa, but they had lost a whole bunch of guys. And then also sort of seemed like towards the end of the year, maybe Jeff Brohm had one foot out the door. And so that, you know, that can have a negative manifestation on a kid's game as well. But I think if you're looking for a guy where the floor for him is a solid long-term backup and the ceiling is that sort of game manager starter, you know, like of a Brock Purdy, I think that's Aiden O'Connell. Some of my notes, accurate, out to two sectors. The one negative I'm going to bring up is with the arm strength, but Aiden O'Connell makes good decisions, throws a very catchable ball. He takes profits every play. It goes back to the decision-making we talk about. Again, very good accuracy, short and intermediate sectors, also over the middle of the field, including those layer throws, everything like that. Ran a pro style system for Brohm at Purdue. So you don't have to worry about, you know, is he going to be able to learn our system and stuff like that? Teammates like him, and he projects to maximize his opportunity and ability. The weaknesses of him, he's not an athlete. He's built solid. He measured in at 6'3", 212. But not a good athlete. You know, he's going to be staying back there in the pocket, and the arm strength, it's capped at the intermediate range. When he has to go downfield, he's really got to throw his body into it, and balls can start to flutter on him a little bit. His accuracy downfield in college was not very good. And so you just have to, you know, keep that in mind if you have him. And then also the velocity on his throws, it's not up there with some of the upper echelon guys. It's just not. So like it leaves you wanting a little bit more on those drive throws and into the window, stuff like that. He mostly does a good job of knowing what he is though and avoiding the stuff that he's not good at. Not a lot of untapped potential there. Like the ceiling isn't crazy high, but the floor is. I know what I'm getting. So, you know, once we get into day three, if I still needed a quarterback, it would be Aiden O'Connell for me. D-Bro, that is all the time, unfortunately, that we have for today. That was a lot of fun. For my colleague, Derek Brown, I am Thorne Eystrom. Thank you for being with us. And tune in next week as I'm joined by another special guest for a deep dive into this year's stacked running back class.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful finger sticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.